This is The Camp with Zach Heilprin and The Athletic's Jesse Temple.
Yes, welcome into The Camp. We have a special show for you today. We're going to talk a little bit about some in-state recruiting and do a little bit of that, as Jesse had another article from your conversation with Luke Fickell from last week. But we have Phil Longo coming up here in a little bit, Wisconsin's offensive coordinator. Going to dive into a bunch of different things with him. It's the first time we've had a chance to chat since before the bowl game, and a lot has happened since then. I think, Jesse, I personally have a number of questions about, you know, the bowl game. Why did it work so well, and how can you make it work like that all the time? And the expectations, obviously, in year two and what success looks like. And I'm sure you've got a host of questions as well. So we'll get to those with him coming up here in a little bit. But did want to start, because you, again, your interview with Luke Fickell from last week, Wisconsin spring practice going to start on, is that Friday? They're going to have their one practice on Friday, and then they will take a couple weeks off and be back early April after spring break. So we will not be there on Friday, unfortunately. Going to be in New York. At least I will be in New York for Wisconsin. You're also going to be on the road covering the NCAA tournament. So we won't have any kind of an update from the first practice, but we'll certainly be full go when things get going the rest of the 14 practices after that. But looking at Wisconsin, and you, the question to start your article is, can Wisconsin make an in-state leap? And Luke Fickell kind of talked about some of the recruiting pluses and minuses. I'd like to ask you that question. Can Wisconsin make an in-state leap?
Well, Luke Fickell's goal is to make sure that they do. And he said this in the summer when I talked to him last June, said it again when I talked to him last week, that they're clearly not there yet. He feels like they're making progress. But he said, if you're behind, which Wisconsin certainly was with these guys because you have an entirely new staff, it's not an excuse, and you've got to find a way to close. So I guess that's the framing of this is a good starting point, is you've got the head coach who recognizes the value of the in-state guys, the top guys, even if there's only two, three, or four, and wants to get them. But in terms of can the Badgers, I think they can, because if Luke Fickell is here for a while, and presumably some of those assistants stick around for a while, I think that's part of what it's going to take. You have to have relationships. It's so important. I know that you tell recruits – and I hear it all the time, commit to the school, not the staff. But let's be real. They're forming relationships with those guys and want to know who they're playing for, at the very least, that there's some stability with the head coach. So I think they can make some inroads. But I address this in the story, and I know you and I have talked about it. It's such a different landscape now than when it was when Barry Alvarez came in here in 1990 and everybody was leaving and you had to start somewhere. And there was that idea of build a wall around the state. I think it's much harder to do that now, because of how early you can identify prospects. You've got social media, Huddle. You've got all these other schools that have started to create a foothold here with coaches who have better relationships than Wisconsin staff. So there is a lot to overcome, but I think Wisconsin can do that. I also don't think, you and I have talked about this a bit, and we might disagree some. I think it's important, but I don't think it's as important as it used to be if you're going to then go get 11 four-star prospects from outside the state, which is what happened in 2024, where they had the most four-star prospects they've ever had. None of them were from Wisconsin. If you're going to get that high caliber type of player, and maybe you miss out on one or two in the state, that's a trade-off that I think you'd probably be happy with if it pans out in the end. So there's a lot to that question, but obviously he knows they've got inroads that they have to make.
We don't disagree.
Okay.
I don't think we do. My assertion is you cannot count on getting that number of talented players out of state every single year. It's just probably not realistic to do. You have a built-in advantage in this state, you would think, to be able to get those guys and then add in those other players from out of state. Wisconsin did such a good job, obviously, on the East Coast, especially with Colin Hitchler and what he was able to do there. I don't think that, to me, is not sustainable at Wisconsin. It's just not. And so the importance of in-state recruiting, you should have a leg up here. You should have the ability to go and get kids and keep them here. Again, it's not easy. And you're right. The landscape has changed in terms of the schools that are identifying kids so early and getting on them very early. But it's still Wisconsin, right? Like, they grew up here. I don't blame a guy like James Flanagan, who obviously was a legacy at Notre Dame, and that makes sense. But, you know, and there's reasons for Owen Strebig too, right? His relationship with Joe Rudolph being one, and obviously not having as long a relationship with the Wisconsin guys because they keep on changing offensive line coaches. But there are other battles here that they haven't won that, you know, you want them to win on a consistent basis. And I think if you're going to have a successful program and a consistent program, you need to recruit Wisconsin well and keep the best guys home. And he understands that. And he said that. So my whole thing about in-state versus out-of-state is one, I feel like is something you can count on a year-to-year basis. And the other one is kind of more of a crapshoot.
Yeah, and I do think it's fair here to note, it's not like they're abandoning the in-state just because they haven't got the top guys. Like, they have three commits in the 2025 class from the state. They had three in 2024. I think where people look at it as, well, it's not the number one and it's not the number two. And every situation is unique. You talked about Flanagan and you mentioned Owen Strebig. And even in 2024, Nathan Roy, who ended up being ranked number one in the 24/7 sports composite, was from the West Coast, didn't move to the state of Wisconsin until before sophomore year of high school and had zero ties here. So again, it's not like a one size fits all situation here, but I think that's where people start to look at it and say, oh, you got to get number one and number two. And that would be great. And that is the goal, but they're still getting players that I think they feel like they can build around, you know, offensive lineman, Michael Reske. He had some big time offers. Notre Dame and Michigan offered him. Wisconsin got him. Cooper Catalano, the inside linebacker from Germantown, had a bunch of Big Ten offers. And then Torin Pettaway from Middleton, who just blew up in January. He had offers from Nebraska, Minnesota, and USC even before Wisconsin offered. And yet the Badgers were able to close out his recruitment fairly quickly. So they are absolutely doing what they can within the state. And then if we're going to go back to that whole 350-mile radius thing that Luke Fickell talked about when he was hired, obviously, they expand well beyond that, which is probably the thing he learned the most. 14 of the 22 signees in 2024 live outside that radius. But the Chicagoland area, to me, is going to be just as important as anything Wisconsin does in the state, because not only does it fall within that radius, I mean, it's 2.5 hours from campus. And the level of talent there, to me, is you're going to get more, a higher volume of talent in that area than you will from Wisconsin, just because of the setups of the two areas and the number of people that are there. They got four Chicagoland players in 2024, and three of them were four-star prospects, with running back Darian Dupree, tight end Grant Stack, and defensive lineman Dylan Johnson. So I think it's not in-state, but I almost consider it in-state as long as Wisconsin can make that a huge priority and continue to rack up those types of players.
Is that kind of like when Brett Bielema considered Minnesota in-state recruiting?
Well, I know Wisconsin's basketball program basically considers Minnesota in-state recruiting if you're just going to go raid all the talent. But again, it's like all these components have to fit together. And obviously, Luke recognizes the importance of the in-state and trying to get those relationships with the top guys, because that does matter.
Yeah, I mean, again, as I've said, I think it's important. I think it's amazing that they went out and got what they did last year out of state. My whole thing is, I just don't know if it's like you can do it every single year. And sure. Right. And I'm not also saying that they gave up or aren't trying or have been a complete failure in the state. They haven't been. They've gotten a number of important pieces. And I'm certainly aware of like Donovan Harbor and Corey Smith. Those guys didn't get read offered. And obviously Colin Sexton was very late in the process of getting offered. So there are always reasons behind why certain guys end up places and why other guys don't. And the lack of continuity, I think, at Wisconsin certainly plays a role in maybe not consistently getting guys to stay home too, right? I mean, relationships are recruiting. And when you're starting relationships, brand new ones, so close to your decision process, it's not easy. But hopefully, for Wisconsin's sake, they are able to find some continuity within the staff, and Luke Fickell is here for the long term, and people see that. But right now, I think it's still kind of a wait and see thing with whether this is going to work or not. But that's a conversation that we've had plenty as well. So I don't think that we need to dive into any more. Anything else you wanted to add, recruiting wise?
I think we pretty much covered it. You know, Luke obviously built his Ohio or his Cincinnati teams around Ohio recruits, but it was a different situation. But I mean, I just think of what Paul Chryst did, and I know the ending of his tenure was less than ideal, shall we say. But I go back to the 5-year stretch from 2017 to 2021. If there was an in-state kid, they were getting him. They signed 21 of the 25 in-state players who were ranked in the top five. And in all those classes, they had at least three. And what I thought was interesting when I went back and looked is 16 of those 21 players went on to start at least one game for Wisconsin. And that doesn't even count JP Benchwal, who could eventually become 17 for 21. Now, I realize some of those teams haven't been, you know, great teams. But it's just a reminder that it wasn't all that long ago that if you had a high-level kid in the state, Wisconsin was going to get him. And I'm not sure what that looks like in the future, of whether that's realistic for it to continue in that type of fashion.
Well, I mean, recruiting is obviously much different than then too, right?
Exactly.
Everything that goes into it, NIL and otherwise, it's a different landscape. So,
and I think that's the other thing I'll say is I did ask Luke a question about NIL, and it was more the broad-based efforts of Wisconsin in terms of NIL, not just how do you get high school recruits, although I do think that, like you said, is a big factor now in the high school landscape. And just like he talked about with in-state recruiting, he said, we're not there yet. But I think if you asked anybody, are you where you want to be in the NIL world, they would say no, because it's always growing. You want to have more and you want to be able to compare. And he said, comparatively speaking to like Oregon and USC. So at least he addressed an aspect of the program that we don't often hear a ton about, because the Varsity Collective keeps a lot of things close to the vest. But that was one other thing that I wanted to mention.
Okay. All right. Let's get to our interview with offensive coordinator Phil Longo. Here he is. All right. And we do welcome in special guest. It is Wisconsin offensive coordinator Phil Longo. Phil, how you doing?
I'm good. How you guys doing?
We appreciate Great. You taking the time for sure. We just pulled you off the field here. You guys are getting close to spring ball. Spring ball coming up here on Friday, the 22nd. You guys got some OTAs going. How excited are you to get on the field for the first time this Friday?
I'm looking forward to it. I think the second year is, you know, I always say we've got 35 coaches coming back the second year, right? So last year at this time, we're coaching coaches. We're all learning. You know, I'm just trying to figure out how to get around the building, much less put the offense in, and you know, our players are doing the same. So right now we've got our staff back. They all know what we're doing. The good thing is it doesn't change. You make some upgrades, you tweak some things. We'll look at where we didn't do things well and we'll make them better. And so hopefully the second year here looks like the second year that I'm used to at most places.
There was obviously a ton of excitement because everything was so new a year ago. When you went through the year, what do you think surprised you about what the biggest challenges were in trying to call plays in year one at Wisconsin?
I don't know if there's any surprises. It's just, you know, anytime you take on a new season with a new team, you got to try to assess what the challenge is, right? And then you're also trying to figure out what's the character of your football team and where are the strengths, because you want to emphasize those strengths. So, you know, looking back now that the year is over, you know, we know our team much better. We know what those guys are capable of and what they're not capable of. And we all have this year in the Big Ten under our belt. In this, you know, and the conferences won't be there this year, but you kind of just learn what we're going to see out on the field and what it's all about. But at the end of the day, football is football. And we've got a job to do. We've got to improve some of the things that we want to be better. And then we'll take that stuff into this season.
You mentioned when you stopped in here that we hadn't talked since before the bowl game. So I wanted to talk about the bowl game a little bit, because that was obviously, I think, the offense a lot of people felt we were going to see most of the year. Why do you think it was different in the bowl game? Was it the fact that you had a hot quarterback, certainly, obviously, guys just more comfortable, the defense? Like, why do you think it clicked, and why do you think that can be the standard week to week for you guys as an offense?
Well, I mean, anytime you have time, more time to prepare, that helps. One of the key things that I thought made a difference was the way Coach Fickell scheduled out the practices. You know, we worked our butt off, right? We got a lot of necessary reps that you needed. But, you know, we kind of handled it in a way where I thought our guys were really fresh going into the game. You know, I thought we pulled things back a little bit before Nebraska and we played fresher. And we were smart about what we did scheduling-wise going into Minnesota, and we played really fresh in that game. And then I thought the schedule leading into the LSU bowl game was one of the best I've been through. And I thought our guys were close to 100% and fresh going into the game. And then more specifically from a positional standpoint, we did have some guys opt out. You had your injuries and all that stuff that every team has to deal with. But our receivers had a really good week or month, as a matter of fact, month of preparation. We did a really good job of separating. Route integrity was really good. And I thought, we gained some confidence and some momentum from the last two wins of the season. And, that's really what resulted in a pretty good outing at LSU.
You mentioned each year being a learning experience, learning what it's like to go through a Big Ten season. What were some of those areas as you studied year one that you felt like you could make a big jump here in year two?
I just think overall offensive continuity. I mean, we have some specific things situationally. We want to be better on fourth down. We want to be better in the red zone. There's things in some situational football that we'll focus on and look at. And it's interesting, no matter how many years you do this, there are always strengths and weaknesses every year. You go, okay, I did these four things wrong last year, if I'm assessing myself, and you look to improve those things. And then at the end of the year, there are other things you want to improve, and that's no different with the team, right? So every year you look at where did you excel and why, where didn't you excel, and what can we do to make it better? Is it scheme? Is it coaching? Is it the players? Is it a little bit of everything? And so maybe you change the course there, or you do what you have to do to improve those areas, and you expect in year two for those things to improve. So I am right now excited about the season, but I just can't wait to get to Friday and practice one.
One of the hotter topics during the season last year, at least on social media, and I know obviously you're on social media, but maybe not as much as me and him are, so you don't get the same people coming at you and asking questions, but not being under center in short yardage or goal line situations. You guys did it a little bit and mixed results a little bit. What is your philosophy when it comes to that, behind that?
Well, we don't look at do we want to be under or do we want to be in gun. We just look at schematically what do we think is best for us, and there are advantages to both. I love being in under and short yardage and goal line, and sometimes if we feel like that's the best way to go about it, we're going to do it. I would say this year it was a little we had a little hiccup during the year because when Tanner Mordecai got hurt and he came back, he could throw and he could catch the snap, but he could not take an under snap. He also couldn't clap, so we had to utilize some different cadences just to bypass that. But there was a 3 or 4 game stretch there where we couldn't even go to under at all. So we actually were in it less as the season went on. I think you would have seen it continue to increase as the season went on if Tanner hadn't experienced a broken hand.
Do you have a barometer on what progress looks like in year two to you?
Yeah, I don't know. I can't tell you. Every team is different. I just know that when you coach and you grind the first year and you get through it, I thought we got better as the season went on. That's one of the things you want to make sure. We ended playing a lot better football than we did when we started. And we're playing more instinctive football. That instinctiveness doesn't go away. So, what happens is we're installing a lot of things. We're learning a lot of new things. Well, there's no new learning outside of the new guys that are here. So now, the beauty to the second season is our guys all know it, and they're just working at perfecting it, right? It's not, I got to learn how to run this route. I got to learn how to figure out who I'm blocking on this particular play. They already know that. They're much more instinctive with it. They get this thing that they can line up and go play without thinking. And the focus this year can be even more on proper technique, physicality, route integrity, across the board, everybody with their skill set doing the things that they need to do to execute and make the play we're running more successful. Coach Fickell just said today, it's not about the X's and O's, it's about the people. And if they know their job and are they executing their job. And, I don't disagree with that at all. So this year is a great year to see us improve our skill set and increase the overall level of execution.
Just got one more question about last year. Why do you think things just never clicked with the offensive line? Well, I shouldn't say never, but never truly, truly got to the level that you guys probably wanted it to, and especially with Jack as coach, and you guys have made a change there.
Yeah, looking at the season, we were very happy with our pass pro overall. We'd like to be more dominant physically in a run game. And I think, like, heading into the second season, there'll be more continuity there, too, as well. It's not just about the instinctiveness of the receivers and the quarterbacks and the RBs and the tight ends. It's being in the offense as a unit, knowing, you know, what the guy next to you is going to do. And I think there'll be less thinking this year because of that benefit of coming back the second year. And, you know, usually the result is we can play downhill and more physically than we did when we, you know, had to think before we snapped the football.
Looking ahead now to spring ball and the season, obviously Tyler Van Dyke has come in. What have you seen from him in the few months that he's been on campus, and what would your expectations be in him coming in and trying to learn a new system and get everything coordinated with players who've been here?
You know, we've been really fortunate. We brought a quarterback in from the portal last year, and he was showed immediate leadership and developed a relationship with the locker room. This year it's different because you've got Braden Locke coming back with a lot of experience, you know, who is now increasing his leadership role with the football team, and obviously knows the offense even that much better than he did last year, and he has experience in it. And then you plug in Tyler Van Dyke, who hasn't been here yet. But we've been fortunate because this is the second portal quarterback that we've come in that has also exuded and exemplified what leadership is all about here, and he's doing a good job assimilating into the locker room and getting along with the team and getting to know the guys. And so I'm looking forward to watching those two and the rest of our room battle in the spring.
I was going to ask you about the quarterbacks, because you do have a new guy in Tyler coming in terms of a new offense and that type of stuff. So he needs reps, but you also have a lot of young guys that you want to see out there as well. How do you envision breaking down some of the snaps for these guys over the next month or so?
So it's hard in season. I think you have a little bit more flexibility in the spring. You know, we want to get Tyler reps and see what he can do when he knows it the way the rest of the guys do. And he does mentally. He's exceptional mentally. But now we've got to get him some reps to see where he is after X amount of reps in comparison to the other guys. And then, you know, Braden has what he does well, and he has things we've identified that he needs to get better at, and he's going to attack that in the spring. And we want to get Nick and Cole some reps here. So at least the spring provides us with more reps to try to roll through those guys and give them all different opportunities in different situations throughout spring ball so we can evaluate them. It's harder to do that in the fall. So the spring for the QB development is a huge component.
Running back is another interesting position, especially this spring, Lucas said. Chez still working his way back. Might not see much of him this spring. What is the thought process going into spring and how you want to divide reps? And are all the guys who were in the room last year still here? Have you made some changes?
Well, everybody's here. We have a huge running back room right now. And so with Chez still working his way back, that provide some reps, and so we have some good numbers in the running back room and some talented cats in the running back room, and then we still have two that are going to report at the end of the spring. So, you know, we're going to get Coach Spalding will get them all reps as they need to develop and to be evaluated, and they're going to want to take advantage of those reps because now we're going to have to find reps for the two that come in June as well, leading into the fall. But it's nice to have depth. It's nice to have numbers. And we've added some really talented kids to that room. So it'll obviously look a little bit different than it did last year. And obviously we hope that Braylon succeeds with wherever he goes.
I'm pretty intrigued also by the tight end room, because obviously Hayden's gone, but you have two guys that played a bunch of football in Riley and Tucker Ashcraft last year. But you have a bunch of new bodies in there, Jackson McGowan, you got the two freshmen. What do you see from those guys at this point, and how excited are you for them to get on the field here?
Well, you know, with the tight end room, I think is maybe a little microcosm of the entire offense, and that the terrain changed so much last year in the tight end room. And this year, you know, we kind of have we've got our bodies and our names, the guys that are in there, and they're all working. And the guys that are here in the spring, we're going to have in the fall. You know, last year there were so many guys on the roster at tight end. You know, and Coach Letton had the challenge of trying to evaluate all of them. We didn't know any of them. I don't know that you have enough reps for 7, 8, 9 guys. You know, and then you go to camp and we lose 3 right before camp. And then the one you turn to that was playing the best ball, Riley Nowakowski, he misses, you know, 3, 4, 5 games at the beginning of the year. And you take a true freshman like Tucker Ashcraft and throw him out there probably before he's ready. Well, that year now pays great dividends for Tucker, and that experience that Riley got pays great dividends. And so they're the two returning guys with the most reps. Seagraves is back. The new names that you mentioned are now in there. And, you know, we'd like to think that group here that we're working with, that Coach Letton will roll through in the spring with, will be the same group we have in the fall. So, you know, there's more stability there, and you'll see, I think, more consistent improvement at that position because we'll have them throughout the entire, you know, the entire year.
We saw the wide receivers, a few of them take some big steps forward last season. Obviously, Will had a huge year. He and Bryson both had 100-plus yards in the bowl game. Are there some guys that you anticipate having a much bigger role this season that go beyond those two and people we saw get a lot of the catches?
So, like any position, those guys were challenged, you know, and you have them come in after the season's over. As we evaluate ourselves as coaches and we evaluate the offense schematically, we also sit down and evaluate all the players, right? And every position coach goes through all that. And then you meet and you challenge your players. Like Quincy Burroughs, here's what you're doing well and here's what we need to improve on, right? And then here's the plan, right? So the stuff you have to improve on, here it is. And the fun part is watching them attack what they need to do. You know, C.J. Williams is a good example also. C.J., we got to get stronger. You know, we've got to play the game stronger. We got to be able to maintain our stem and, you know, and create more route integrity with, and we got to get stronger because we got to be more physical, more violent blocking, you know, those type of things. And then, you know, they go away for break and they come back. And C.J. Williams right now, I think, is about 15 pounds heavier than he was when he played. Wow. You know, and he's all rocked up right now and the veins are out everywhere and he looks fantastic and he's, you know, he's working his butt off here. So you love watching individual guys respond to, you know, the challenge to get better. You know, and somebody spoke to our team. I should remember who it was and I don't. But Coach Fickell really liked the quote and I did. And I wrote it up on our board. And, you know, the quote was the speaker said to the team, you've got to have the greed to be perfect, and you know you got to be able to go after it. You have to be able to identify and look at yourself and say, look, I am subpar at these areas, and then go attack it. Don't take it personally, attack it, get better at those areas. And if you keep improving your weak link, you become a better overall player. It's the same thing we're doing with the offense. What do we not do well? Well, let's make it better. That was the weak link, and as that improves, the entire system improves. And that's what we're asking of our guys. So this is a fun time of the year, as long as we're grinding, just to watch players respond to the challenge of getting better at their weaknesses. And I think we're seeing that at a pretty good rate right now in the receiver room.
Prior to the bowl game, there was a lot of excitement and intrigue around Tretch Kekahuna. We weren't really sure what – I shouldn't say we. I think we all thought like he was going to, you know, be a big-time player. But then he went out and proved it in the LSU game. How excited are you for his future and what he can do, especially with him and Will being able to work the slot together?
So Tretch is a perfect example of what I think a player, it's almost impossible for a player that has these three things not to eventually get on the field and be able to contribute to the football team. And, you know, one of them obviously is ability. So he's got to have enough ability to be able to go excel. Tretch has that. The second thing is you got to want to compete. And as elementary as that sounds, not everybody has that. If it were easy, everybody would do it. And that means competing all the time, not just when it's convenient or when people are watching you. You know, you're competing when nobody's looking, and you want to win just about everything that you do. And finding ultra-competitive players who are willing to grind and work, you know, that's finding those guys in recruiting is an art. It's tough, you know, to determine who is going to work the way you want them to work. And obviously, you know, Coach Fickell has a very high expectation there. You know, and then the third thing is, you know, the phrase care factor is probably doesn't do it justice. I mean, I would prefer to say that you're obsessed with the football game. You know, you're obsessed with X's and O's. You're obsessed with training. You're obsessed with being the best out there at your position. And Tretch exemplifies all of those. Now, what he'll accomplish this year, I don't know. But I know he's ultra competitive. He's violent. He's physical. Like, he's going to fight you. every single down all year. That is just, that's the way he's made, you know? And he has ability, you know, and we see that. And you saw that at the LSU game. You know, and the third thing is, he is obsessed with this game. He cares. He wants to be the best one out there. He wants to prove he's better than Will Pauling. That's what's in his mind. That's how he competes. He's never said that, but I feel that way because that's how he practices every single day. You know, and if we could just get those three things, which is a lot, that's asking a lot of a human being. That's asking a lot, but that's what we need out of them if we're going to take the program where Coach Fickell wants it to go.
It's the last offensive position we haven't touched on. Offensive line, you had four guys who started in the bowl game who are coming back, including Jake. What are your expectations for the group and maybe the challenge for them to get better with a fourth position coach in as many seasons?
Well, not to get boring and say the same thing about all the positions, but there, you know, there are things they want to get better at too. It's nice to have veterans coming back, especially the Twin Towers at tackle. The thing that I'm starting to see with those guys is some leadership, maybe a little bit more than we had last year in terms of just handling the room. It's not often an O-line takes over the leadership role of an entire team, but it's possible. But you want to know you got the one, two, maybe three guys in there that are going to make sure that all 15 or 18 guys are rolling in practice and in preparation the way they're supposed to. So you kind of see that. We just look like a group of veterans out there right now, you know. And, you know, and AJ is working hard to address things we want to get better at in that room. I just love the way our guys work. And I get to see them a lot more this year because our quarterbacks are down lifting with the O-line, which I love. I think it's a great move to put the two of those together. So when I'm down there evaluating quarterbacks or just watching them work out, I'm down there around the O-line, and I almost feel like everybody on the team should wander through there at some point when you have the big men on both sides of the ball working out, just to have an appreciation for what those guys go through to prepare themselves for the season. So I'm excited about the O-line. I'm excited about the entire offense, and Friday probably can't come fast enough.
I have just one more question. I don't know if you have any more, but one more question. Going back to the quarterbacks, the way you talked about Braden, the way you talked about Tyler, is there a competition there for who's going to be the starting quarterback? Or do you, because it felt like last year and going into spring, it felt like Tanner was the guy. Do you have a guy right now?
I treat every spring the same way. Okay. I mean, it's open. You know, I mean, Braden improves and is the best guy, we play Braden. You know what I mean? If Nick or Cole comes on that on the scene and they explode and then they're executing the offense better than anybody else, I'm going to play them. If Tyler's the most talented and they can understand the system, it's whoever is productive the most consistently. Those are the guys that we typically are going to start. And, you know, I don't know, with the exception of one quarterback battle where it came down to the last day and Mac Brown said, who's starting? That's really the only time in 35 years that I've ever had to make a legitimate decision. I think when a guy takes the bull by the horns out there and they demonstrate and separate themselves from everybody else, and that's what you want a guy at that position to do, they decide it. The team knows who it is. The coaches know who it is. You know, declaring it is really just repeating the obvious. So that's what I'm hoping here in the spring. We'll give them all an opportunity. Let somebody go attack it. And whoever comes out of this competition as our starter will be a really good one because it's a good room.
My last question would just be, how different do you think this offense will look in year two from a schematic perspective? Or is it more like you were alluding to before, you've got guys who simply better understand it and therefore will execute at a higher level? So maybe schematically it's not as different from year one to year two, if that makes sense.
Well, I fully expect to see the improvement. I mean, that's just personally, that's my job. Right, that's our staff's job, is to be better than we were last year. So, you know, I think we're going to look different because the players are different. You know, every year you've got Tyler Van Dyke and Braden Locke are very different than Tanner Mordecai. Okay, you know, so you emphasize certain things with him, you emphasize certain things with the others because they have different strengths and different weaknesses. So that dictates it in a certain direction. You know, we have more depth at some rooms like tight end and RB now. So I think the roles in those two rooms will change a little bit. I think we're going to have more depth. I think things will be more diverse. I'm excited. The receiver room's a little different. We only really have two new additions in there. So you got a group that is the beneficiary of a whole year of development. And I think they're excited because they know what they can do now. And I think they are excited about getting into the spring and establishing that a little bit. I think we're playing with a lot of confidence and momentum right now in terms of what they're doing, training and all that. And then, you know, like when we figure out what the character of this year's team is, we'll obviously have some schematic changes as well that we implement in the spring. So all of those things kind of build and develop what you're going to look like this season. I would like to think if we're doing our job as a staff that the offense always looks like what we emphasize, and that would be the strengths of our, you know, of our skill guys. And so we're going to play to those strengths, and that may mean we look drastically different than last year. It may mean we're a lot like last year, but just better. We'll let these guys take us where we need to go, and we'll have a much better idea, and I'll be able to answer that much more succinctly at the end of spring ball.
All right. Hey, Phil, we really appreciate your time, and I'm sure we're looking forward to seeing the team here in spring too. So appreciate your time.
Thanks, Phil. Appreciate it.
All right, there he was, Wisconsin offensive coordinator Phil Longo. Wisconsin spring practice coming up here in just a little bit. They get going on Friday, and they'll have practices then again in April, the other 14 in April. Do we know where they're going to be doing the spring game yet, Jesse, if at all?
I don't know that there is going to be a spring game.
Spring scrimmage? I mean, I know it's...
And I think Edgewood might potentially be in play as an outdoor venue, which is up the street, but I don't know exactly what the plans are going to be. And I'm not sure that there's a straight up, here's the 15th practice, everyone can come, because they don't really have a setup for that.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, if they get the same number of people as came that normally come, they could probably fit into many high school stadiums around here.
Zing.
Boom. Just kidding, of course. I don't know that there's a lot of stadiums that hold 10,000 around here, but who knows? Hopefully the weather's better. You don't get all four seasons in one day, which is what happened for the launch last year. All right, Jesse, thank you very much. We'll be back next week and look ahead, further ahead, I should say, to spring, and probably have a little bit of news to talk about whatever comes out of practice on Friday. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Zach.
All right, there he is. Jesse Temple from The Athletic. You've been listening to The Camp.